Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. Last week, we began our conversation with Ty Silzer, who is a colleague of mine. We both write for a column in the Grand Rapids Press, which we'll talk about in just a bit. We talked about purity culture and the True Love Waits movement of a few years ago. And we're going to continue that conversation today. A bit about Ty. He is a former pastor and present writer, speaker, and technology consultant. He's a follower of Jesus and a student of Christian scripture, history, epistemology, culture, and pop culture. And you can find him where we both, as I say, write for the column Ethics and Religion Talk in the Grand Rapids Press, also available at therapidian.org. So once again, welcome, Ty.
Thanks for having me back.
So last week, as I mentioned, we talked about True Love Waits, the purity culture, and also Josh Harris and his work, in particular, I Kissed Dating Goodbye and Boy Meets Girl, is it?
Correct.
Yes, that's right. One of the things, one of the biggest criticisms I had of the purity culture, and honestly, I started studying it late.
Yeah.
It didn't really affect me when it was happening by the 90s and 2000s. But when I started seeing videos of these speakers who were rallying the troops, talking to young kids and saying things like, and I realized that they were talking to both sexes, but for some reason it was the girls that kind of got the brunt of it. And I saw a couple of times somebody claiming that if you are not 100% pure on your wedding night, it's like you're a used stick of gum.
Oh yeah.
You Terrible. Know, you're garbage.
Yeah.
What's up with that?
Yeah. Well, and Harris, the other common one is a rose pulling petals off. When you finally get to your significant other, your husband or wife, there's no petals left. So what good is the stem? Harris's, they did a reenactment in that documentary of standing at the altar with all of your girlfriends lined up behind you while I'm bringing them, all of them, into this marriage. Yeah.
Actually, that's really kind of how I did it myself, but we won't go into that. Go ahead.
I think the most valid critique of the purity culture is shame. Is it's not you know, you messed up, we're all broken. It's there's something wrong inherently with you, and it's something you can't undo either. Scientifically speaking, there's no such thing as virginity, other than, you know, you can mark the first time you rode a bike, you can mark the first time sex took place. But as far as someone who has and hasn't had sex, scientifically, there's really no difference.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Which is something we don't have time to get into and go down. But we, you know, saying, well, you're going to screw up your marriage, you're going to screw up your life. And the other thing, too, is, again, I talked last time about reading the Bible, using the Bible as a starting point for reading this book. And it's like, God has used a lot of people, a lot of good people who messed up sexually. You know, Abraham is, you know, marrying a handmaiden so he can, you know, have a child. David is, you know, going hog wild, yet David is the one who wrote most of our songs of righteousness. So God's using all these people, but yet the language is, if you do this, you're no good. You're not worth it to anybody, all that. So all kinds of shame attached to that. And that Paul in Corinthians says, and the Corinthians were a very promiscuous, both people and church.
I know I dated a Corinthian. No, go ahead.
That's good. He says, I present you as a pure, spotless bride before the Lord.
They don't treat sexual proclivities the way they would say stealing or lying.
Correct. And there's pros and cons both ways. I think is the biggest message of Christianity how you screw up. Then, you know, they nailed it on the head, you know.
Or a cross.
Home run. We all mess up. We're all going to mess up. We screw up. I think the bigger message of Christianity is forgiveness and how that wasn't the biggest drum that was beaten during all of this. You can still have, not, well, there's no hope for you. Those are two very different things. And when you're formative, that can really mess with you. You can be forgiven. There is forgiveness for you. You can still have a great life, a great marriage, great everything.
Yeah. And you know, I look at what I see and I come away with a judgment, if you will. Mm-hmm. All right. So for instance, if I see someone who is incredibly promiscuous, mm-hmm. man or woman,
sure,
big partiers, big hedonists,
yeah,
I can pretty much guess that they're going to go down a sinkhole.
Yeah.
In their lives.
Right.
All right. And often a lot of other bad habits go along with that.
Right.
It's not just that. Yeah. Then again, I also know people who come from your culture. I mean, I know a woman who was left with like seven or nine kids. And she is a product of the culture that we've been talking about.
Hmm.
All right. And all of a sudden her husband just
ups.
Right. So, so to say that, you know, here, she tried to do the very best thing
right.
and look how she ended up. And these other people, they didn't even try.
Right.
And they're messed up. And then I look at so many of the people I know and most of them, they have, you know, dipped the pen in the inkwell, so to speak. I mean, they do not come to the marriage 100% pure.
Right.
They may have had a couple of different affairs before that.
Sure.
But then they mature.
Right.
They commit, and they have a great marriage.
Right. Yeah. And here's the thing that kills me is how people want, you know, some people just, Josh Harris, you really did us wrong and all that. One of the best things I got from his books is purity is not a line you cross. Which if it's the gum metaphor, if it's the rose metaphor, like you crossed it, petal gone, gum chewed, there's no uncrossing it. He said purity is a direction you head. And I love what you just said is, you know, yeah, our trajectory when we were younger is screwing up, making all this stuff, but got our head on straight. What do I really want in life? What's the type of person I want to be? And where's my life headed now because of that? And then the great marriage is a result of the trajectory you're on, not did I tick these boxes? Did I cross these lines? Did I leave the right lines uncrossed? Yeah, absolutely.
So let's talk about the documentary that you and I sat down to see in preparation for this show. What's the name of it?
It's called I Survived, I Kissed Dating Goodbye.
Yes.
And I hear that title, and I'm like, who's the I that survived it? You think it's maybe written from or posed from the perspective of all the people that were hurt and wronged by this book, but the documentary really surrounds Josh and him trying to figure out, what have I done? Maybe I didn't do right.
And we find in it interviews with a variety of people. Mm-hmm. And as you say, some people are on camera telling their story and they really got hurt by the book.
Yeah.
But we also find that most people, maybe all of them, still support the notion of maintaining a very strong restraint in their lives, but not through the way Josh was prescribing. Is that fair to say?
Again, I think 10 different people pick up that book, they're going to pull out, you know, we have limited ability to think about multiple things in parallel. So you and I read the book, we're going to walk away with different things. Now we start a discussion and be like, oh yeah, he said that, that was a good point, et cetera. We're going to do that to each other. So yeah, I think there's personal responsibility. I think there's leader, like who are the adults speaking into their lives? Mm-hmm. One of the stats that was brought up in one of the side interviews was still to this day in 2019, well, I guess it was 2017 when the interview was shot, parents are still the number one influencer of where a child's sex life will go, for good or for bad. So that trying to abdicate responsibility onto, you know, this author, who they've never met, was he part of it? Sure. You know, the thing that kind of kicked this off for Josh is, someone reached out to him on Twitter and said, your book was used as a weapon against me. But sitting through her entire interview, everything in her life was, the Bible was used as a weapon against her. The notion of God was used as a weapon against her. She was in a fundamentalist church that I think she would call it cult, if I remember correctly. So people, her relationships were being used as weapons against her. So I look at who is, you know, we have to think, you know, not to turn this into gun rights, but we need to be very mindful of who the shooter is. But yeah, the weapon played a part in it, and Josh's book was a weapon along with many other weapons, but he wasn't the shooter. And I think he feels a lot of responsibility for all these people that are hurt.
One of the things that really fascinated me in the documentary is how the purity movement became heavily sexualized.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. One thing that just really surprised me, I can't remember the name of the book, maybe you do, but one of these people who is encouraging of purity, the cover of the book is
a midriff.
A midriff.
Yep.
I mean, a bare midriff, a really hot bare midriff.
Yeah, with a tattoo.
With a tattoo, yeah. Yeah. What, do you remember the name of that book?
I think it's Making Chastity Sexy.
There you go.
Yeah, Christine Gardner is the author.
Thank you.
Yeah.
What's up with that?
They actually, in the extended interview, they talk about, and by the way, if this documentary is free to watch, it's on YouTube, it's on a website, it's easily found. They have an extended backstage pass that you can pay for where you can see all the interviews. I get no money from that, just letting you guys know. She said she was going for the irony of it because during the purity movement, she said, you know, you'd get the hunky football player up front.
Yes.
Kind of
yes,
portraying the idea of, well, hey, you know, I'm doing this. And maybe if you do the same thing, we could be together one day. And they would chant, you know, sex is great. Sex is great. And I can remember being at things where that was being screamed and yelled from the front of the thing. Part of it's shock factor. Part of it's trying to de-taboo the thing, but then it was always have the little tagline at the end, as long as it's within marriage.
Yeah, right, right.
Yeah. So
this whole thing, sex is great. You'd hope that they would be chanting, sex is great, from what I hear.
Sure. Yeah. What do you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although it's great in the fact that it brought me here. I wouldn't be here without it.
Correct. 100% of people are here because of, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And is that still a thing? This chastity is sexy. Was that a fad that went by the wayside, or are they still kind of trying to promote that?
Well, it certainly doesn't have the push that it has. So one of the things that kind of makes this all more historically interesting is that sex and promiscuity amongst today's teenagers and millennials is way down. Lots of things are, and there's many contributing factors such as social media, depression, et cetera. But
and less adherence to religion. Fascinatingly enough.
Yeah, that's definitely a part of it. They didn't include this in the documentary, but it's in what they call the deleted scenes. There's a movement called Silver Ring Thing that is still alive and well. I don't think it has the attendance that it once did, but these are big rallies, but they're probably smaller rallies now. And again, they put on a big show with the and I think they're trying to do some good, but it's very, it was watching it, and this was an interview from 2 years ago. Josh seemed frustrated to me during the interview, because he's trying to be like, well, what's the right way to head with all this? What are the right decisions? And, you know, what's the right way to view all this? And this guy is copy and paste out of the 90s of, well, this is what we do and this is why we do it. And yeah.
It's if you're just joining us, you're listening to Common Threads on WGVU FM. I'm Fred Stella. Ty Silzer is my guest today. We're talking about purity culture and the works of Josh Harris. So before we watched this documentary, you told me something about Josh that kind of surprised me. A couple of things.
Yeah.
So first of all, apparently his marriage has ended.
Yeah, correct. So that this is the, as I've been forecasting this in my mind, having this conversation with you, is this, there's some degree to this seems almost like TMZ to be discussing this. But yeah, Josh made an announcement on Instagram in July that he and his wife of 20 years were separating towards divorce. Very amicable. It's a picture of both of them smiling. And at the end of the day, like, Josh, I don't know you. If you're listening to this, if I say anything wrong, I apologize. Let's get coffee sometime. But I can only imagine that was done to some degree. It was going to get out. And that is, do we want to control the narrative? Or do we want people to run away and speculate, which they're going to do anyway? All that. But he's kind of the poster child of, he, you know, that was the, that's the punchline. That's the kick in the bucket over of this whole thing. He's the poster child of doing it right. And here, the thing that was promised, if you do all the right things, you will have this amazing thing, that has fallen apart. And I think they've done a good job of not getting into the details of that and such, because frankly, it's not our business. So he had that. And then within the week, I think it was just a couple days later, he also announced, actually, I've got it right here. He says, my heart is full of gratitude. I wish you could see all the messages people have sent me after the announcement of the divorce. They're expressions of love, though they are saddened or even strongly disapprove of the decision. I'm learning no group has cornered the market on grace. This week I received grace from Christians, atheists, evangelicals, ex-evangelicals, straight people, LGBTQ people, and everyone in between. Of course, there have been strong words of rebuke from religious people. While not always pleasant, I know they are seeking to love me. There have also been spiteful, hateful comments that have angered and hurt me. The information that is left out of our announcement is that I've undergone a massive shift in regard to my faith in Jesus. The popular phrase for this is deconstruction. The biblical phrase is falling away. By all measurements that I have for defining a Christian, I am not a Christian. Many people tell me there's a different way to practice faith, and I want to remain open to this, but I'm not there now. Martin Luther said the entire life of believers should be of repentance. There's a beauty in that sentiment, regardless of your view on God. I've lived in repentance for the past several years, repenting of my self-righteousness, fear-based approach to life, the teaching of my books, my views on women in the church, my approach to parenting, to name a few. But I specifically want to add this to the list now. To the LGBTQ plus community, I want to say I'm sorry for the views I have taught in my books and as a pastor regarding sexuality. I regret standing against marriage equality, for not affirming you in your place in the church, and for any ways my writing and speaking contributed to a culture of exclusion and bigotry. I hope you can forgive me. To my Christian friends, I'm grateful for your prayers. Don't take it personally if I don't immediately return calls. I can't join you in mourning. I don't view this moment negatively. I feel very much alive and awake and surprisingly hopeful. I believe with my sister Julian that all shall be well and all manner of things shall be well. So pretty big announcement. This is Josh, to give you the short bio on his life. His parents grew up in Oregon. His parents were major movers in the homeschool movement. They gave Josh a lot of you can do anything. And Josh had like a magazine that he wrote for or edited for other homeschoolers, sold it, made money and all this. So he had a writing communication and entrepreneurial knack even before this book came out when he was 20. Then at 20,
that is amazing to have a bestseller.
Yeah, right.
At 20.
And he was not the only book. He was the most popular book. I think the thing I remember about it, seeing it, was this guy has marketing nailed down. And he actually, publishers will often do most of that, but he had actually a good say in the marketing of the book. Sometimes authors don't even get to get their books a title, but he got the title. I believe the people on the cover are friends. Well, no, that's the second book. He's on the cover of his book. That's him under the hat, if I remember right. He then got plucked up by a pastor who was had a network of churches in Virginia, and he was grooming him to be the lead pastor one day. So this is age 21, no seminary, no college, and just going, you know, full force into this. So 27, 28-ish, he becomes pastor of not just this big church at the front of these network, but he's in charge of the whole network. In the 2000s, he actually pulled that church out because there was a sex scandal from the 80s that they had tried to cover up. And he's like, we can't be a part of this. So props on that. Then about 4 or 5 years ago, he decides, hey, you know, if I'm going to be leading people, I should know what I'm talking about. So I should go to seminary. And that's when all of this, the documentary, the rethinking his thoughts and all that, that's when that all starts.
Any predictions on your part when you take into consideration the declining lack of interest in organized religion, maybe not spirituality, but certainly organized religion, the declining birth rate, the decline in sexual activity in today's youth. Well, first of all, before we get into any predictions, do you have any thoughts on the decline of activity? The fact that young people don't go out as much on dates.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What's your take on that?
I think there's a lot of lack of hope. I think there's a lot of, my nephew will be turning 16 next year, doesn't want to learn how to drive. I've got another friend who's a senior at Michigan, and he doesn't want to drive, doesn't want to get his license. And he opened up to me about that. He's like, I'm just so fearful that I will cause an accident and ruin someone's life forever. So I think there's a lot of negativity that comes from lack of hope, fear, depression that is motivating a lot of these things. And relationships are all over screens now. So you don't have to physically be with people. So that makes intercourse hard over phones. So there's a lot of, we don't have time to go down this rabbit hole, but there's a movie 10 years older or more now called Children of Men that is just about the human race erasing itself because no one can repopulate anymore. So there's medical and scientific things that are kind of showing that we're heading in that direction. But then you have the societal on top of that we're headed that way. So then to tap that on top of church, churches they're dying left and right. People want what's authentic and real, and you've got people that are trying to keep the old guard still in movement and trying to do things the old way. So I, it's from a faith belief, I think Jesus loves his church, and the church will always live in some way, shape, or form. And I'd love to see it, include everybody. But as looking at the numbers and the trends, like it's at least not going to exist in the way it is now. But it's that person in the hospital bed that they've had on the machines keeping them alive for decades now. They have no semblance of being a human anymore other than they once were. I think that's what the church is going to look like without some
intervention.
Yeah, some intervention. And I don't, that used to be revivals. And I don't see revivals getting people like they used to. I don't think it paints a good picture for Christianity. I think there will always be people who love Jesus. I think there's a lot of people who love Jesus and are sick of church. One of the terms in that list is ex-evangelical. Some of those want nothing to do with, they're one click away from atheist, and others are just, well, we're one click away from church. We just, that's, we're Christians in every regard except no more church.
That is fascinating. For people who are interested in, you mentioned people wanting to see the documentary.
Yeah.
It's I Survived, I Kissed Dating Goodbye.
Correct.
And if you just go to YouTube and put that in, mm-hmm. will you get it?
Yep, correct. It's an hour and 17, 18 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And you also mentioned a link where you can get behind the scenes.
Correct. So if you Google I Survived, I Kissed Dating Goodbye, or really any kind of combination of I Kissed Dating Goodbye, you'll find the writer and producer of the movie was one of Josh's seminary classmates. She actually did it as her thesis. It's her website. If you pay for any of the backstage stuff, that only goes to fund the ongoing support costs of keeping the site up and everything. Probably she's in a lot of debt for having made this documentary.
I would guess that is,
yeah.
That is the state of many documentary makers. Yeah. I am fully aware of that. Ty, it was great having you
here
today.
Thank you so much for having me, Fred.
Yeah, wonderful conversation. Thank you for joining us here on Common Threads. You're listening to WGVU. My name is Fred Stella, and with me today has been Ty Silzer, as he was last week. And I want to invite you to join us again next week, right here on WGVU-FM.